Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And a very good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number. You can contact us via text or WhatsApp on 087-179-1032. Standard text rates apply. That's 087-179-1032. And we have a very special guest in the studio with us this evening, Stephen Kershaw, amateur astronomer and, what should I say, expert on all things telescopes and such like. And we'll have a few questions for him. And if you have any questions about telescopes, if you're thinking of buying one at this time of the year, he's the man to ask. And if you have any queries, you can send us that text or WhatsApp on 087-179-1032. We'll talk to Stephen in a moment, but first, the sky notes. What to see in the sky this week?
Yes, indeed. And we'll start with the International Space Station as usual. Still in our skies until December the 7th, where we will get to see it. Now, you have the time for tomorrow because we've missed today's one. I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, it was about 20 past 6 this evening, I believe. But tomorrow, 5:36 p.m. until 5:42 p.m., as usual, you will see it going west to east at the same apparent speed as an aircraft, but of course there will be no flashing lights, but it will be quite bright, actually. Magnitude minus 3.5, maximum magnitude, that is, and it'll be quite high up to about 64 degrees above the horizon as it passes just due south of us here in Dublin. And it'll be passing above Saturn, the Moon, and Jupiter tomorrow evening, in that order. So I don't have the time I think there's a later pass, but it's not as good, and Google it. Heavensabove.com if you want to get the time for your specific location. But that's correct for really anywhere in the country.
Yeah, we start Mercury and Venus, unfortunately, not really around until next year at this stage. And they're hiding deep in the glow of the sunset at the moment. Mars, on the other hand, is a good evening or a night sky, minus 1.7. It's hanging low at the moment, and it comes in and it gains altitude. And I was out watching it last night as well, which was really, really good. It's very impressive. So, in fact, last week I brought my binoculars out to have a little wander around the sky because it was extremely clear. So, and you won't miss it. It's got a sort of an orangey glowy tint to it. So the other one to look out for at the moment, although the vision, the viewing is not good this evening, so got to get the mild haze across. It's like a veil, and you can't really see. And the Moon is up well as well.
You can see the Moon, but you can see the Moon, the Earth shine on the Moon, even through the haze. Yeah. It's noticeable. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. So Jupiter, it's a little bit brighter than Mars at minus 2.6. And it's highest in the south about an hour after dark, which is sort of nowish. And I'm not sure what time it sets this evening, but you can follow it all the way through. And Mars will follow Saturn, plus 0.8 in Capricornus. And it glows in the south-southwest as twilight fades. Uranus and Neptune, these are the two fellas that are really elusive planets. So you will need a very, very good pair of binoculars or a good telescope to see either of those. And their magnitudes, just in case you're interested, 5.7 and 7.9 respectively. So that's really all there is to see in the sky. And of course the International Space Station, don't forget about that until December the 7th.
Thank you, John. If you do get a clear patch of sky this evening and you want to track down Saturn, it's 7.25 degrees to the upper right of the Moon, which is just a little less than the width of a fist at arm's length. And on Thursday, you mentioned Mars, but actually on Thursday, Mars will be at its closest to Earth. It has a slightly elliptical orbit, and it will be a mere 62.07 kilometers from the Earth, and although opposition is just a few days later on the 8th. And on Thursday and Friday of this week, the Moon is near Jupiter, And on Sunday, the 4th, if you're a Neptune fan, Neptune is stationary and then it'll resume the prograde motion. And, next Monday, speaking of Uranus, Uranus will be occulted by the moon. And we shall talk about that in just a moment with our special guest, Stephen Kershaw, because it's ideally, if you want to view this, a telescope is what you need. Which brings me to our special guest, Stephen Kershaw. Stephen, thank you very much for coming in.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in. We want to talk to you about telescopes. I'm sure there's a lot of people this time of year.
There are, yeah.
Busy time for yourself.
All the same questions.
Well, maybe we can go through some of those questions. And if you have any questions, as I mentioned, you can text them or WhatsApp them into us on 087-179-1032. But first of all, telescopes. Okay, some people are interested in them and viewing the night sky and don't really know where to start. And they can be, I suppose, bamboozled with some of the things that people might talk about. Do you want a reflector or a refractor? And see, I suppose that'd be one question. What's the first question that you're normally asked, or the first question that you would normally ask somebody who wants to buy a telescope from your establishment, K-Tech Telescopes?
It's normally, what's the best telescope? Genuinely, yeah. They come in and go, I have X person looking for a telescope, or I'm looking for a telescope myself, and what's the best one I can get? And that's a couple of questions later, you'll normally kind of help to narrow it down. The first thing is probably set the budget. Because generally, the bigger a telescope is, 95% of the time, the better. So, and usually, the more expensive it is, the bigger it is as well. When you're talking like kind of sub €1,000 beginner telescopes, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Once you set your budget then, I do always usually ask the following question, if they can possibly answer it, that are they more interested in planetary and lunar or deep sky, that can narrow it down as well. Mm-hmm. And then you just talk to them about what they want to do with it. You know, some people want the fully automatic go-to ones. Some people want the manual ones. Celestron have a new range called StarSense Explorer that's basically push-to, doesn't have the complexity of the motors, doesn't leave you on your own as a manual scope, so there's a bit of help involved with that as well. It uses an app to tell you where to point the telescope to. They're hugely popular as well, so, yeah.
And in general, just with regard to refractors and reflectors, I have a refractor, which is, by definition, I believe, means it's a lens. But yeah. Can you tell us then the difference between them, besides the fact that one is a lens and one is a mirror? Is there one better for one type of viewing than another?
Yeah, there can be. Like, if you can, a refractor generally has more contrast and much sharper images because it doesn't have a secondary mirror blocking the light coming in. So if you're looking for, like, sharp planetary views, a long refractor would be what you'd really get. They're absolutely perfect for it. On the other side of it, they're not particularly good at deep sky, because when you have a telescope that's really good at the planets and the moon, it's not going to be particularly good at deep sky, because you need a wider field of view for those kind of things. And that's where generally you'd go for reflectors, because reflectors tend to be shorter focal lengths, wider fields of view, and they're generally cheaper once you start heading into size. So typically the largest refractors you'd buy would be 4-inch to 6-inch. Like, a 6-inch refractor is one of the biggest you can get. Mm-hmm. Whereas reflectors, you know, you can get 12-inch reflectors for sub 2K, you know, which is quite a big scope.
And then with regard to accessories, then you're going to need an eyepiece or two or three. Is there any guidelines as to how many you should get? Or again, does it depend on what you want to view?
Yeah, a lot of it can depend on that. Most telescopes come with two eyepieces. They'll come with a reasonably high magnification and a reasonably low magnification one to give you a bit of a taster from both ends. And then if you want, then if you start to kind of fall into the planetary end of things or lunar observing, usually people would get on to be looking for higher magnification eyepieces. And then every telescope has a limit with regards to that. And then if they're falling into the deep sky stuff, they'd be looking for lower magnification eyepieces. So typically most of us tend to have an eyepiece that gives us the maximum magnification that we can get, then a few in the middle, and then heading towards your least magnification, so that you have a good range from your deep wide field targets all the way down to your really high magnification narrow field of view.
And then I was just thinking now about those lenses, like Barlow lens, where you can there's 2x and 3x. Is there?
Yeah.
There must be, I assume, a disadvantage to having them, although with a Barlow lens, it turns effectively each eyepiece into two different types of magnification. Yeah. But I presume there's a disadvantage.
There is. Like, I wouldn't be a huge fan of Arlo's, and I do get a lot of customers in that say would have been talking to somebody that might have had a telescope or has a telescope, and they come in going, oh, I think I need a telescope and I want to get a Barlow lens, and I'd be straight away going, what do you want a Barlow lens for? Oh, it's like someone told me that's how I get high magnification. And then you explain to them, like, listen, say you took an 8-inch Dobsonian, you could use a 5mm eyepiece with that comfortably enough, give you about 240x. You could have a 10mm eyepiece and a 2x Barlow give you the same thing, but it's a lot of glass. And if it's a cheap Barlow, it's a lot of poor glass. So normally you're better off getting the single highest magnification fixed eyepiece and only get a Barlow when you have maybe 4 or 5 other eyepieces above the 10mm range, so that when you buy a Barlow, you suddenly have double the eyepieces. But a lot of people, probably the notion is that the Barlow gives them the high magnification, but it doesn't. It's just, I don't know why people have that idea that that's what happens with them. So I generally tend to push people away from Barlows in the beginning.
Okay, well, I know from my own experience with my 4-inch refractor, and I have a box of Celestron lenses as well, and there's a Barlow lens in it, and there's the Plossel eyepieces, and of course I have a small, maybe a 4mm eyepiece. Yeah. And
with the tiny hole.
The unfortunately eye relief is terrible.
Yeah.
And I remember just for pig iron, having a look at the moon to the smaller, I think it was the 4mm eyepiece and a Barlow lens, which in theory would give me huge magnification, 500 or something like that. I don't know, but trying to find anything on what you're looking for on the moon, and then it was so dim that it was, it's all right saying Arkham's, in theory you put this eyepiece with this Barlow lens and you get 500 times magnification, but in practice, it
never works.
It's useless.
No. Yeah. I know that under Irish skies, like, we really don't have brilliant skies. About 300x on most given nights is about as high as you go. There's some really, really clear nights. You know those super clear nights that you get where the atmosphere is really clear? You might get up to 340, maybe, if you have a telescope and an eyepiece that would push it that high. But typically, no matter what telescope people have, under Irish skies, about 300x is pushing it very, very high. We just don't have the seeing for it.
Ironically, I think some of the clearer nights when we call what the seeing is good, that can be even after a heavy downpour of rain, strangely enough, since the clear the sky.
Yeah, like I nearly always know the clear nights coming up because a friend of mine, John McKeown, that does the planetary astrophotography, and I know that he doesn't take his gear out unless it's worth taking it out. So when he puts up a picture at 7 o'clock all set up, it's like, tonight's going to be a good night, you know. So, yeah, I take me cue from that.
Last night was a good night. It was terrific. Yeah,
tonight, it was very clear, yes.
It was terrific. So I went out, but last Tuesday I went out with the binoculars just to have a little wander around the skies. And it was pretty good as well. So my lenses are 9, 12 and 25. And the C word as we used last year, I got one of these zoom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a nice, you can just leave the whole lens in. It goes from 6 up to, and quite to 25 or maybe a little bit more.
Is it? Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, zoom eyepieces can be worth getting if you want to kind of experience a wide range of magnifications.
Yeah.
So assuming we have our telescope then and an eyepiece or two, and, well, what's there to see? A lot of people, I imagine, they don't know. Well, they know the planets, and like, how do you know when there's a planet about and how to find it? And as well as planets, the deep sky objects. Some people might say, have a look at Andromeda, M31. But I suppose what I'm trying to get to is, how do you find that out? Are there books and star maps? Like, star maps can be very daunting if you look at them.
Yeah, they can, yeah. They
frighten you.
Probably one of the best books is Turn Left at Orion there. That really is one of the best books because it looks like a really heavy-duty book, a lot of reading involved, but when you actually go to it, it's not. There's quite decent moon maps at the start of it, and then once the book starts, it starts in January, ends in December, and goes object by object, tells you where it is in the sky, tells you what it looks like. He actually did pencil drawings of it in a small telescope and a reasonably large telescope, and so you can get a good representation of what you're looking for. And then you literally pick an object and off you go. That's probably the best way you can do it, is the book Turn Left at Orion. Like, that is very good.
I have a copy of that myself, and John has one now.
I have one now.
But I actually got, I bought one a long time ago, and unfortunately it was mislaid. But it was, it's such a good book that I would buy another copy.
Yeah, it is a brilliant book. Yeah.
So I'd recommend that.
Text in. Great to hear Stephen on the show. He's first class. So there you go.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much.
And a pleasure to deal with. That's from Darren in Dundrum as well.
Oh, very good.
There
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren. Mm-hmm. For your text. Keep them coming in to 087-179-1032. Now, Stephen, as I mentioned, next week we have the occultation of Uranus by the moon. Is there... viewing aids would you suggest that you have? What would be best to look at that?
Okay. Genuinely, for that, a telescope would be better than a pair of binoculars, and because with the binoculars, with the glare off the moon, you can't really dampen it down, whereas with a telescope, you can use a moon filter, and you'll be able to, not too dark a moon filter, quite a light one, so that you don't get rid of the planet as well, and then you can just watch it in that, and push your magnification reasonably high so that you can actually try and pick up as much of what's going on as possible.
Okay. Yeah. And tell us about your own observing passions. Are you, which field in particular are you?
I'd be more deep sky now than any of the planetary or the lunar. Like, there's the likes of Mars, like, I might look at it in a couple of days' time just for, you know, because I happen to be out observing. I typically just don't bother with them at all, really. I look at Jupiter if it's there, Saturn if I can see it. The back of my house, the trees are up fairly high in the south, so I tend to only be able to see stuff for like a short period. But most of my observing is done. It's all usually deep sky. Don't have a huge interest in double stars or splitting double stars around. It's all like deep sky, galaxies, nebulas, planetary nebulas, star clusters, that kind of thing.
Okay. I was just getting back to that book, Turn Left at Orion. If it wasn't for that, that helped me find, I was admit, when I found the Dumbbell Nebula and it's the Ring Nebula. What's that? M51, is it?
M57 is the Ring. M57 is the Dumbbell,
And but binoculars too, I believe, a good place to start.
Yeah, a lot of people would a lot of, say, older astronomers would often recommend get a pair of binoculars over a telescope. I don't know whether I'd get a pair over a telescope, because when people come in, they would ask, like, binoculars or telescope? And I'm like, depends on what you want to do. Binoculars are brilliant for wide field viewing. Like, I've often lay out on the decking, just cruising the Milky Way with a pair of 15 by 70s up to my eye, like, just looking at all the same stuff that I've looked at before, but it's just brilliant. If you want to get closer views of the moon, or, say, a bit more detail, or you want to see a lot of the deep sky stuff with a bit more clarity, a telescope is the only way to go. Binoculars will never match it, because all the astronomy binoculars would have fixed magnifications, and even, like, a big pair, you're talking about them only having 100mm lenses, 25 by 100 would be a fairly big pair of binoculars. It's not going to match a 5-inch reflector or an 8-inch Dobsonian for the view, and the magnification that you could get. So you're at 25x with your binoculars. Your Dobsonian can go up to 240x, probably a little bit more, 250x. So that's a huge difference in when you're looking at stuff, especially planetary stuff with the high magnification.
And of course the bigger binoculars are... can be quite heavy and hard to keep steady.
15 by 70s would be probably the limit for hand holding, and even then, if you were going out for half an hour, you'll get tired fairly quickly holding them up. 20 by 80s, there's no hope you'd hold them up for long. They'd have to go on a tripod. But binocular viewing is, the depth of field is brilliant, you know. I don't know whether any of you used a pair of bino viewers with a telescope.
No.
Oh my God, it's mega.
Is it?
It's mega. And I only have a pair of them because a customer years ago traded in a pair of bino viewers and a couple of other bits and pieces for something else. I can't remember what it was. Celestron Star Sense or something. And they sat in the shop for ages and ages and ages, and eventually I was like, I might bring them home at a pair of 32mm plossels, you know, the ones in the Celestron set. Put them into the bino viewers, looked at some star clusters and stuff, and I was just like, oh my God, this is mega. Like, the depth of field that you get from just using your two eyes, I know it sounds really stupid, is just mega. So if you ever get a chance to view through a telescope with bino viewers, it's really worth doing. It's pretty good.
So a general all-round telescope, if somebody was coming in into your shop tomorrow.
Yeah,
I remember when I chose mine, I went for the SCT, the Smith-Cassegrain, because it's nice and light, okay, it's an 8-inch, it's still difficult enough to set up, and in some ways I probably would have preferred to go for the 4 or the 6-inch version of that,
right,
which you can just plunk at the table and watch away and then just take it back in again and do it. So what would you find that people would come in looking for?
Normally, if they come in and they kind of say, right, I've about 300 odd euro to spend, maybe 300 to 400 euro to spend on a telescope, what have you got? I normally either push them towards a 90 mil refractor, which is the long tube refractor, focal length of 900 mil, or towards a short tube refractor, a 102 mil typically. And I basically just ask them straight up, do you think you'd be more interested in watching the Moon, Jupiter and Saturn, or would you think you'd have a bit more of an interest in the deep sky? And then which one, which answer they give then decides whether you get the 90 mil or the 102. And then you'd have somebody was in shop and say, obviously the more budget that you have, the more complicated it gets. So if you had someone shopping with, say, €600, there's so many telescopes to pick from, there's a few more questions you'd ask usually, because you're into the realm of the go-to telescopes that have the finding and tracking systems and all of that. And that's where I often get asked, like, say, an 8-inch Dob, which is £550, or a 5-inch go-to reflector, which is £600. Near enough the same money, which one do you go for? And I literally say, what's the user like? Do they have a ton of patience? Do they have a lot of time in the evening? Do they like technology? Because a lot of them would be operated from an app these days. So once you tease out the answers to those, you kind of go, well, I recommend you should get this or get the other one. Like, straight away, if you had £550 to spend, an 8-inch Dobsonian, straight up, if you can get one, brilliant. You know, they're deadly. But a lot of people don't like the look of them and the size of them, and they go, oh, look at the size of that. No way that's coming into the house. And usually you might have, a couple that come into the office, and one half goes over to the Dob that's on display and goes, yeah, this is the one. And the other half goes, there's no way that's coming into the house. Because it doesn't look like a telescope. It's not pretty looking, you know. And they'll just discount it straight away, even though it is, at that money, the best telescope you could get, the best views you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, but two people into the shop today bought Dobs.
Yeah, there's no motors in those. You have to follow the...
Yeah, there is a motorized version available, but it's near on £800 dearer than the manual one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're on your own. You're basically, you're just a copy of Turn Left at Orion, and you're, you know, going, oh, let's find the Orion Nebula, you know, and off you go, looking for the Bell Stars and looking to the south. And yeah, you're kind of left on your own, but you learn really quickly, like really quickly, where everything is and how to find your way around the night sky.
Or where did that go?
Yeah.
You go off inside for a second, you come back and it's disappeared off the field of view.
Exactly, yeah. Like rockets across the field. Because that's the other thing a lot of people do forget is if you're buying for a family, and I often do say, like, if it's more than one user or a lot of people looking through it at the same time, you're better off getting one that has go-to. Because with something that's, say, tracking Jupiter, everybody can queue up the eyepiece. Whereas when you have, say, a manually controlled scope, you're constantly, hang on a second, you know, trying to get it back into the centre.
Get it back into view.
Yeah, so a lot does depend on the people or person that are going to use it. Like, it's almost a personal thing as to which scope you would go for, given the budget that you have.
Yeah, the other thing as well that I haven't gone for yet, I don't know whether you have this, Ben, is one of the kits that has the filters, the different filters. And things for watching the moon, because it takes the brightness away from the moon and things like that. Is that worth having?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Most of the time I'd say, like, try not to observe the moon when it's full. Like, typically photographers will get their shots with the moon, but if you're observing it, the worst time possible is when it's full. Either side of that is great. Half moon is the best, where you have, like, the contrast with the shadows across the Terminator. Like, that really is the best time. But if you have a particularly decent-sized scope, even a half, the moon is going to be quite bright. So Celestron do like a filter set where you have four different grades of moon filter, basically from light to dark. That's a good buy, yeah. Or if you are doing a lot of planetary observing, you can buy a filter set that has one moon filter and a couple of colour filters.
Mm-hmm.
Like blue filter on Jupiter can tease out the cloud bands a little bit more. And, you know, you just try them all on everything.
Yeah, and see what happens,
Exactly, yeah.
The other thing is just, time is marching on us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get him back. We won't let you go now.
Is there equipment that one can get to observe the sun? I know that's a tricky one now.
Yeah.
Well, observing the sun, even with the naked eye, can be dangerous.
Yeah, if you have a telescope already, you can get solar filter paper, which has instructions on how to make a solar filter, so you can observe it. And all you'll see is, like, the sunspots. You can buy dedicated filters that would fit over the top of the telescope nice and tight with grub screws and all to keep them nice and tight, or you can get a solar telescope. Now they're big money, like I think the smallest one is like 2k plus or thereabouts, but that will show you the detail on the surface and the proms and all the flares and everything off the edges. You can get solar telescopes that will do that, yeah, but be very, like, do not point it anywhere near the sun unless you have your
telescope. I did look through a special solar telescope once. You could see a little spike of prominence.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Here's an interesting text as well from Alan. Good evening, Alan. Thanks for the text. Great information. By the way, ISS Transit Moon, best through telescope from 9 PM tonight. That makes sense.
Does it?
Yeah, it's our encyclopedia. This is here. This is Alan from.
You have to be in the right, I suppose, spot in the country to get that.
Yeah, we would just check that again, just in case. But beware, 9 o'clock PM. There you go.
Thank you for that, Alan. I think we may be. Have we just got one more moment?
Astrophotography is one of the areas you and I have sort of, we're thinking of dabbling into. But
I have a telescope and I have a camera, but I haven't stuck the two together. Not yet.
It's something we can get into again, and there are some, what's known as the Skywatcher Star Adventure Minis, which are like a motorized. Go-to. Is it really a go-to for a camera rather than a telescope?
Yes, for cameras with short lenses, like 200mm or less, typically. And it'll allow you to take, like, longer exposure pictures, so you can get, like, you know, your Milky Way shots would be taken with one of these kind of mounts, with usually a 14mm or maybe a 24mm lens. That's the easy way to dabble in it, without having to connect it up to telescopes and getting into, like, once you get into longer focal lengths, you get into, like, you need very serious tracking gear for that. But the Star Adventure, Skywatcher Star Adventure and the Star Adventure Mini would be two that will kind of get you started in astrophotography and get you taking, you know, with a 300mm lens on a Star Adventure 2Y, you can get the area around the Andromeda Galaxy, the Orion Nebula, that kind of area, so... the processing that comes after is a steep learning curve.
Yeah, when we get you back, we will go a little bit more into that, in depth into the astro end and into the deeper sky observing, etc. as well. So so it's interesting. This is sort of the new technology on the block now. I've only come across it in the last few weeks, and we've mentioned it on a couple of programs over the last few weeks. So we now know which one to go for, which is...
So if anybody wants to get in contact, you'll find out some more and maybe see what you have. How can they do that?
You can check us out on www.ktechtelescopes.ie. We have an office overlooking the M50 in Dublin in the U-Store building. We have a big office set up there so people can come in and have a chat, and we have a lot of stock.
You can
a lot
see
of stock
it
on the way.
M50. I drove past it very often.
I was in it last week, which is very impressive.
That's KTEC spelled K-T-E-C.
That's it, telescopes.ie.
That's super. Stephen, thank you very much for coming in
to
us today. And thanks to John for driving the sound desk this evening. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Don't forget our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie if you want to ask any questions or queries you may have. We'd love to hear from you. Up next, it's Hello China. Then 9 o'clock, it's Bren Linant with Threads. And 11 PM, Ear to the Globe with Nigel Woods. And from midnight till 2 AM, we have After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, thank you, Richard. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Just before I say goodnight, Alan was back, 9:39 PM, used telescope to see ISS silhouette across the moon, and says, there you go, so 9:39. Anyway, night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.